Hi, and welcome to another episode of Journey to a Dream, which is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. As we are talking, we are just ahead of TT 2025 getting underway. We're not going to talk about the weather forecast, which doesn't look brilliant for the next week. But what we are sure of is we are going to see some incredible racing over the next fortnight. And one of those people who will be out there putting on a show is our guest today.
My name is Brian McCormick. I run and ride for the team Roadhouse Racing Macau, so busy man. I've been around the sport a long time. My sister's boyfriend at the time was Irish champion of motocross, and so I started going motocross when I was like 7-8 years of age. I remember going watching races, and from then kind of progressed, absolutely obsessed, and always wanted a bike. Unfortunately, my brother decided to jump off a road bike and break himself up, and my parents were like, no, you're not getting one. That's it, you're never getting a bike. But I was always around racing. I've been going to paddocks since I was 8 years of age, 9 years of age, and then when that fella Hilton, who was going out with my sister, he progressed into short circuit racing, and then I started helping out, and then that went from in the paddock in there to paddock and BSB every weekend. I was leaving school on a Wednesday night and heading off on the ferry. The teachers would be asking where I am. My parents were like, I don't know, I think he's gone away again. But yeah, so I spent most of my life in the paddock. I've been around bikes since I was eight years of age. It's the earliest memories I can kind of remember. Really fond of motocross. I always loved that. But grew up around that and then moved on into short circuits.
And it must have been difficult, and I totally get it from your parents' point of view, because that protective instinct just kicks in, doesn't it? But when you've got something that's such a passion, were there many arguments about it?
Oh, yes, constantly, every week, every day nearly. It got to the point where I was too young to afford a bike myself. I said this recently in something else, and it's the first time my dad actually heard about it. They wouldn't help me fund a bike or get a bike, and I wasn't earning enough to buy a bike. So I went to the credit union and got a loan, but I needed his signature as a guarantor. But our business was across the road, so they knew my parents, knew my dad. So I was like, I pleaded with your man. I said, look, I'll bring it over. I get him to sign it. He says, no, he has to come over here. And I was like, no, I'll bring it to him. So I brought it outside, forged a signature. That was it then. Got a first motocross bike. And from then, I was buying new bikes every year on the back of his credit union loan that he never knew anything about. And it only kind of came to fruition when it was about 30 grand after buying a GSXR 1000 that he actually found out about it. So it went for years. I managed to pay it off, but went for years and he didn't know. So they were asking where these bikes were coming from. I was just telling them they're friends' bikes. I was minding for them.
Oh my God.
So that's how it all started. And then I think they realised then there was no getting away from it. So
yeah, probably time to accept it then. Yeah. Dare I ask what the reaction from your dad was when he did find out?
Actually, he was calm enough. There was no solicitor's letters came or anything from the credit union. Yeah. So that was good. So no, he was okay. He's not a huge into motorsport. Sometimes it's a good thing to have your dad behind you, but sometimes it can be a bad thing. You can see with certain families like really works. The dads are amazing. The other families, you see, to push the kids too much and it kind of turns them off to sport. So I don't know, was it a good thing or a bad thing that he wasn't there? But he was never into it, but he always supported me from then on, because we soon kind of started going fairly well and started winning Irish championships and stuff, and then he kind of helped out as much as he could. I worked for him, so time off was my pay. I was getting paid for being racing instead of working, so it worked out for a while.
And Ireland really is seen as the home of motorcycle racing, and I'm guessing you must have seen some people from there who'd gone on to do great things and probably thought that's who you wanted to follow.
Yeah, well, where I'm from in Ireland, it's either a horse or a hurley. I don't know if you know what a hurley is. It's a sport. Hurling is a sport in Ireland. We hit a ball with a stick, basically. Anything else down around me, no one really cares about, you know. Motorsport isn't huge down the south coast of Ireland. When you get to Dublin and you get to maybe Cork or definitely up the north, obviously, you know, we all know the legends from the north of Ireland. Motor racing is huge. So it was kind of hard to get going from where I was from. And the only kind of step in the door I had was the likes of Hilton and a few other lads who had raced from down around me. And that's how we kind of got going. But yeah, there's the history of motorsport in Ireland, the north, and in some sections down south is amazing, you know. And what we've brought to over here and the wins that Irish riders have had over here in the past, it's amazing. I'd love to add to it, hopefully, at some stage.
And at what point did the TT and MGP, did the mountain course in general, sort of start coming up on your radar?
I've always been a fan. I was always, like, obviously, when I was growing up, I was in the paddock, like Robert and Joey and all them were around, and they have Archibald, Richard Britton, all these boys. And I was soon kind of in the circle as a young kid, but I was soon around in the circle with the likes of Richard Britton and Archie and all them boys when they were racing short circuits. And to see the attention they get as well, it was amazing. The fans and stuff and how people reacted to them. And they're just legends, you know. And then I was always, obviously, a Joey fan. Joey and Robert were amazing. And I always followed, like I remember going up to Joey asking for clutch plates for Hilton when I was only a kid, and I was shaking in my boots, but he was such a nice man to approach, you know. But he he kind of, obviously I was a big fan of his, so I followed the TT all my life since I could watch it and was listening to radio. There was only one place in Tramore where you could get Manx radio. And I used to go down and park the car down and listen to it. And I said, and when I, after I won the Irish Superbike Championship, I think it was 2007 or 8, I said it in some magazine that I always wanted to come here. I think it was Paul Phillips or someone straight on the phone to me then, mm-hmm. asked me to come as a newcomer. So I meant to come in 2009. The team I was with, it didn't really work out. They couldn't get a bike to last around a short circuit, so I wasn't too confident in coming over here with them. So we just came as two lads in a van. 2010, yeah, came as my first year and haven't gone back since.
And as you said, I mean, you'd already had great success elsewhere, and I wonder just how different it was preparing for that event, because, I mean, it does seem to be a completely different ball game compared to what you've probably been used to.
Yeah, I was only used to short circuits around Ireland, and I obviously dipped my toe in England for short circuits a bit here and there, but I'd never done any of the national road races in Ireland, never done any of the small road races. I did the North West. It was the only first one I did before I came here. Yeah, I had a lot of learning to do, to be fair. I did all my homework. I knew where the track went, but I was kind of treating it like a short circuit in places and actually crashed in my first night. But I don't think we even got going the first couple of nights because of the weather, but I crashed in Ramsey and Waterworks too. I didn't make it past Ramsey for about 3 nights because I had breakdowns in this area, so they were calling me Gordon Ramsey for a while. But yeah, it was tough the first year for practice-wise because the weather was so bad as well, so in 2010. But it just, once I got one clear lap on my own, that buzz, there's nothing that replicates it, you know. And we were lucky enough back then to do 120 in my first year on a standard Fireblade out of a showroom. I was quite happy with that. Back then it wasn't too bad, you know.
And I'm guessing the first year, you kind of mustn't put any pressure on yourself, really. It's just about sort of getting used to it and getting round. It's when you come back the year after, especially since you'd had such a good session with getting that 120, that's possibly when you start thinking, OK, what can I do now?
Yeah, we came back full of enthusiasm and everything. Well, getting ready for it, we were full of enthusiasm. Everything was going well. We had the same team kind of lads kind of built up a little bit more. We were after purchasing a really good super bike. We had a good setup ready to come. Unfortunately, 2 weeks beforehand, I was involved in a crash in Mondello and dislocated my elbow. And I was waiting about an hour for it to get put back in. So there was a bit of damage onto my elbow. So I came with great intentions. Unfortunately, I had to do a physical literally every day to try and pass the test to make sure I was strong enough, but I wasn't. I shouldn't have came, really, you know. It was kind of a bit of a waste of time. But look, we learned, every time we came here, we learned something. But then following year, then we kind of pushed on again and we had some good results, some bad luck. The senior was cancelled in 12. So we were kind of creeping forward every single session, every race, and I was looking forward to the senior, but it just didn't happen in 12. But yeah, the bug was definitely there then, and I fell in love with the place and I just couldn't see myself not coming back.
The mental strength, I think, to sort of think, I want to do this. I know I probably shouldn't be, but what is it that gets you through that? I mean, it must have been painful.
Yeah, it's the fear of missing out more than the fear of being sore. When I noticed that, mostly it was the COVID years, and you're not here this time of year. My partner couldn't live with me. I was intolerable. You know, it was just, it's like a drug. I don't know, I've never taken any drugs, but I presume this is what it's like. It's an addiction that, it's just such a good feeling that you can't replicate from anywhere doing anything. I've tried a lot of stuff. And the fear of missing out kind of outweighs the pain. And when you're on the bike and your adrenaline is going, you don't really feel much. It's when you're trying to get off the bike afterwards is the problem. But I've been very lucky over here since that crash, actually, in 2011. I've met Isla Scott over here, and Isla has been brilliant. Like, she's looked after me every year since and kind of kept me together. But she knows my injuries from back then all the way to now. So that was a big help. Only for her, I probably, because I had a bad crash here in 2013 as well in practice. And I shouldn't probably have been racing, but we ended up getting some of my best results, 13th, 14th, and the big bikes. I think it's the fear of missing out than fear of getting hurt or anything, but the adrenaline helps, definitely helps.
And I guess as a sort of thing, you need to get your confidence back as well as quickly as possible.
Yeah, definitely. And confidence is huge around here. And if the bike is handling, is a big thing around here. If you're chasing a bike that's not handling, it's hard work. If the bike's handling, it's not too bad on the body. You can kind of get through stuff, but if it's an ill-handling bike, it definitely is much, much harder. I've come in, all the riders have done this over the years. You take off your gloves and there's welts in your hands, there's blood all over your hands from trying to hold on, you know what I mean? And that's not the nice side of it. But when you get things right, it's there's nothing like it.
And for you, how tall are you?
I'm 6'2".
Sort of, you know, having to be so physical and sort of hunched over, I'm guessing after a few laps around here, you'd be a little bit stiff.
Yeah, you know what, to be honest, the longer races suit me. I kind of seem to get better as the race goes on. I don't know, as my body just crack into place and bend into place after a certain point, but it doesn't really, it's just on the smaller bikes, maybe the 600, it really affects me. I struggle on a 4-lap 600 race more than I suffer on a 6-lap senior or superbike race, just purely because I can't get my shoulders out of wind. I'm built like a transit van, not... like a jockey. Like, so yeah, it doesn't help in this big. It helps in certain places because you have the physicality to change direction at speed. But yeah, aerodynamically, I'm not great.
We're right saying you're 11-time motorcycle racing champion. You've competed in Macau, Northwest 200, as you mentioned, Ulster Grand Prix, Irish road races. And I understand you've even had a go at rally, so four wheels.
Yeah, I was lucky enough. I won, I think, Southern Centre Championships in Ireland. We won quite a lot. We've won two Irish Superbike Championships, Master Superbike and Super Sport. And then, yeah, I've been lucky to race all over the place. Macau, I've raced in America. I've had podiums in Daytona back in the early noughties as well, which was great, a great experience. I've raced there 7 or 8 times. I got a phone call to ask. I did a promo day for a Mondello Park, and I did a bit of single-seater car stuff. And then I did kind of a rallycross thing. But then they asked me would I actually race in a rallycross event. I did, and I really, really enjoyed it. It was only one make series. We won one of the heats, and I think we finished fourth overall. So it was actually quite good. It's weird. It's a lot slower than what we're used to. So the reaction times are a bit. You have more time to think, which is good. But really enjoyed it. Maybe it's something I might think of in the future. But at the moment, no. I think I'll stick to the two wheels for now. Anyway.
And it's a definite no to three wheels, I understand.
Yeah, well, I've never got asked, and I don't know why you're 6'2 and 17 stone. I don't know why someone hadn't asked me to sit in the back of a sidecar, but no, I definitely think I'll leave that to them. They're brave, special lads. No, I think I'll give that one a miss. I'd rather be on the back than in one, I think. But no, I'm not built for it. But it'd be a good experience. But not that I'd be afraid of it. But no, I don't think it's for me.
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. You obviously not only do the TT, you do the MGP as well. We know last year was incredibly frustrating because of the weather and just that constant delay and whatever. And you were setting out the front. And how do you cope with that side of things?
Yeah, my big shining moment to start number one, and I had rain for 3 days. So all I saw was on the board of where it was wet, and basically the whole track was wet. It was so bad. And there was a chance of the rain was coming in, fog was coming in. So we knew it was only going to be the one lap. So it was kind of shit or bust, really, go for it. But it's hard to do that when you're setting off number one and no one has been on the road in 3 days. So I was a bit cagey. I had full confidence in the team and the bike because Greenall Racing, I have to say that they have the best bikes I've ridden. Like, they're some of the best bikes I've ridden. They have a really good team, really good family, full trust in the bike. And they had no pressure on me whatsoever. They said, it's up to you if you just want to wobble around and go out and see what it's like. But start number one, and I knew what the bike's potential was and what I could do. So I tried to go for it, but a load of moments in the first two sectors. And then, unfortunately, my bike slowed at the end of Sulby, and that was that. It didn't make it as far. It made it as far as Ramsey, and that was it. But yeah, it was the race that wasn't supposed to be for me, unfortunately. But hopefully this year will be better.
How much time do you spend sort of dissecting what happened last year before you come back here again?
Yeah, I'm trying not to think of the bad stuff anymore and just forget about all that and come back with a smile on my face and not restart, but reboot a bit and just kind of go again. I have the same crew. It's my own team. Built up a really good team of lads around me that I know for the last 10, 15 years, some of them. So I'm really confident in everything that they do. So I just have to worry about myself and been fit and healthy and ready to go. Obviously, I'm running the team, so the financial side of it, ferries, the flights, accommodation, food, travel, all that stuff, apart from the bikes, no one sees all that stuff that goes on as well. And it is a full-time job. I'm lucky enough I'm doing this full-time. I'm running this team and this business. So it's a lot of work, but then I forget some. They have to remind me sometimes I'm still riding a bike and to concentrate on that because I get carried away and then I forget that I'm actually riding still as well, you know. So because we had other rider supposed to ride for us this year. Unfortunately, he's injured. Burrell David Datzer, he was flying this year. There was some really good testing done with us. And unfortunately, he got hit from behind in a crash over in Harris, I think. And he's recovering. He'll be okay, but he won't be here this year, unfortunately.
Well, we wish him all the best. What made that partnership with David click so well, do you think?
Beer. we talked the end of last year and we talked to a few riders. Unfortunately, the rider Owen O'Shaughnessy was supposed to ride for us last year as well. And Owen got injured at the Northwest and didn't make the TT. So he rode for the Manx first. But he had a bit of a tough time last year. So he's kind of taking the year out this year. So David had chatted. We had chatted a couple times. We had a few mutual friends who said it might be a good idea. You're similar kind of guys. And it might be because at the end of the day, if you're having fun and things will click, you know what I mean? Because obviously the team works really well. He knew that. And we're on the same machinery, BMW, so we could supply some good stuff. So yeah, there was a few conversations and then we chatted. We had a few beers one night and Skyped and had a chat and then went from there and we went testing out to Spain a few times and yeah, everything really clicked. He got on really well with my lads. They loved him, which is very important, because if you don't get on with someone and there's kind of, you're walking eggshells around people, it's a long 2 weeks over here. It feels like a month. So everything went really well. It's just unfortunate this happened. But look, we're looking to the future with him again. He's keen to keep going, and we'll do something when he recovers fully, hopefully.
Tell us when you made the decision then to start your own team, because obviously you had ridden for some major teams yourself and obviously had seen that side of things. But as you say, the other side and actually being in charge is a very different beast.
Yeah, I rode for CD Racing in my early career. That's who came here in 2012. I rode for Ryan Farquhar in 2013. I've rode for MER Kawasaki and British Superbikes, a few superbike teams over in England. And when COVID hit, I'd kind of set up my own team to go. When COVID hit, I was riding for myself, and we said we'd go to, because there was only six rounds of BSB, we said there was no racing anywhere else, so we said we'd go to that. That's when we met Faye then. I had a good chat with Faye, and then Faye came on board. I was the first FHO rider. So Faye started up the team with me in 2021, was it? And we kind of went from there. And then when she bought out Smith's, she wanted to keep the relationship going, so we kind of stayed with them, then with FHO for a few years, which was amazing. But I was kind of running my own side of it. I was kind of separate to them a little bit, but still getting a full backing from them. So I kind of was running it as myself anyway, and then it kind of went from there, where I just kind of, with Roadhouse. Roadhouse have been a long time sponsor of mine. Kieran, it's actually his first time ever coming to the Isle of Man. He's coming this year. He's from Dublin originally in Ireland, but he's living in Australia. But he owns the bar in Macau. He's been my sponsor since 2016, I think, 17. So he's the major part behind it as well. So when we had a chat, we said we'd set up my own team and we'll go do it. And yeah, we've got some good backing and good help from BMW and help over the years. So we said we'd just do our own thing, because it was hard for me travelling from Ireland to the UK, and there were some bits over there, some bits here, and it was kind of hard to do. So we just built it ourselves and do it ourselves from the south. It's hard because we don't have much around us down where I'm from, but it's working well so far.
And in terms of the importance of sponsorship and that support, I'm guessing it's almost hard to put into words what it means to you.
Yeah, they pay all the bills at the end of the day. I don't have a pot of money, unfortunately. I never won the lotto, but I'm still trying. No, yeah, they're... Like, Kieran from Roadhouse has been behind me for ages. Some of my sponsors have been with me for years. And some of the names I actually see on my stuff, they're actually unable to sponsor me at the moment. But we keep their names going because they've been so good to us from the start, you know. And there's no... They're so sorry they can't help us. But it's not about that. We're kind of a small team. They still come and hang out with us and stuff. So, yeah, sponsors are a huge part of it. Obviously, they pay for everything. And hopefully we're doing a half-decent job of giving back to them and getting a bit of coverage for them. And some of our sponsors have come back to us saying that they have got a lot of jobs out of what we're doing, so it's good. I'm not the best in the world. I'm a bit old school. I'm not the best in the world with social media and all that kind of stuff, so I'll have to sharpen up on that maybe and help out, because that's what it's all about, is just the exposure they get, you know. So they deserve as much as they give me, so we're always searching for new sponsors, so if anyone's out there. But we're very lucky with Snickers Workwear and Solid Gear Footwear, who came on board last year, and they supply all the team clothing. They're a good they're a financial sponsor, as well as doing all my merchandise as well. So my merchandise will be available as well for sale here at the TT, and it's online as well on customworkwear.ie. So it's all that kind of stuff kind of helps, you know, their product gets out there as well as helping me.
And you mentioned it's a small team. Who's on the team?
Yeah, we have about seven or eight lads who come from... They're all Irish lads who are from around me, have been with me for years. Ian McCarty, who has been with me for a long time, he was a BMW mechanic, so it's great to have him. He has the knowledge, you know. And, Brandon, who actually, one of my mechanics, he's making his debut this year at the Manx. So he's going to be a newcomer at the Manx Grand Prix this year on one of my bikes for Roadhouse bikes. So yeah, we've a good team of really... They're all good friends, you know. And it's, if we don't have that, as I said, it makes a long 2 weeks. And it's not enjoyable. There's no point in doing it. So I've been here many a time where it's just a hard slog, and there's someone in the team and you don't get on with someone else, and it's not a nice place to be. And at the end of the day, it's a sport. It's meant to be a bit of fun, but we take it very seriously when we have to as well, you know, and I have full trust in all the boys.
How good are you at taking feedback?
Yeah, no, I am actually. I wasn't. Maybe years ago, I wouldn't have been. Now, I'm the most critical of myself, to be honest. But if they have something to say, I encourage them to say it to me, you know what I mean, but in a nice way. Be gentle about it. But I said I'm the hardest person on myself, and at this stage I'm not hiding behind any excuses, because I've been racing so long now. I've come in here since 2010, there's no point in making excuses. So just, if I'm not good enough, I'm not good enough. And the day I'm not good enough and the day I start slowing down, I won't come back. I'll run a team and I'll do that. But I still want to be somewhat competitive. We've been in the top 10 for the last few years. We've been consistently there. Last year now was a bit of a disaster with injuries. We were all carrying injuries. Every rider's carrying injuries. But just it affected me a bit. I couldn't do what I wanted to do on the bike. So
you'd had that big incident. Was it in Macau?
Yeah, the crash in Macau. And I went feet first into a wall, about 130k. So I bounced fairly well off it. But smashed a tib and fib and popped my knee out and did a lot of damage to my left knee. Both knees, but left knee was quite bad. But we didn't really stay there that long. So I myself out of hospital in Macau and went to Thailand for 2 weeks on holidays before I actually got it looked at. I went back
to the hospital.
Of course you did. Yeah, yeah. Why not? And we had a holiday plans, so there was no point in ruining it. But yeah, so probably falling off scooters and falling downstairs and stuff over in Thailand didn't really help. But I went back and got surgery done. They asked me when did this happen yesterday, the day before, and I said, no, 3 weeks ago, China. They were like, they weren't too pleased in the hospital. But yeah, no, we got it all sorted. And this year I'm of much better health. I've been training a lot. I did a lot of riding out in Spain. I've been lucky enough, actually, I got to go out to Australia and ride some classic Grand Prix bikes in Adelaide in Australia, thanks to Tom Dermody. So I've been out there. Never been to Australia before, so that was a good experience. And I've Texas boot camp. I always go train now in Texas boot camp with Colin Edwards. So we got a good bit of training out there for a week solid of flat track and racing and stuff. And then we had obviously our testing in Spain. So we're in good shape, yeah. And I'm buzzing to actually get the first nice dry lap under my belt. So I'm really looking forward to it.
And physically, being fit is so, so important. And how has your training evolved over the years, I guess, since you've gained more experience?
I've always trained I don't look it. I suffer with dad bod syndrome or something. I don't know what it is. But I actually do train quite hard. And I did all the wrong things for years, whereas I was bulking up and my arms were too big and I couldn't hold on after two laps because I was too bulky, you know. So I just found out kind of a solution to what works for me. I suppose after 20 years you might learn something. But cycling, mountain biking, anything that's fun as well, and hold on to a handlebars, motocross, anything. Obviously there's a bit of gym work involved, row machines and all that, but I have changed over the years, and I'd say I'm fitter in the last 5 or 6 years than I have been through most of my career. And that's just learning the right ways to do it for, and looking after the injuries that we've all had over the years, like all riders. But you kind of have to work around them as well and try and keep them right. I enjoy it now, though. I don't, like, it used to be a slog, but I actually enjoy the training side of it now and staying fit and healthy. But hopefully it'll help this year.
And as we're talking, you've just arrived on the island. You got here yesterday. I understand you've got a little bit of work to do at the paddock to get everything ready for everyone else.
Yeah, yeah. Even though I'm the boss of the team, it doesn't feel like it. No, I've arrived, and yeah, it's a lot of setting up to do. Don't mind that part of it, to be honest. Setting up isn't too bad. It's the taking down afterwards. But if the senior goes well, the taking down is a lot happier than. But yeah, I've kind of instructions from everybody. Most of them are arriving tomorrow on the flight, so instructions to have everything ready for them so they can waltz in and just start their little bits of work. But I don't mind that, to be honest. I said it's my own team, so I can't hide away from all that. I'm not a rider that can just arrive along and everything's ready for me. But yeah, it's a lot of work, but sure, it's rewarding at the end of it, hopefully.
What would make TT 2025 a success in your eyes then, Brian? Is it a lap time, a position, maybe something a little bit more personal?
Yeah, lap times is something, obviously, everyone's goal is to get to the 130. Just like, you know, everyone's goal, a lot of people have surpassed it, but I've been very consistent. I mightn't have the fastest lap speed, but I've been very consistent over the years. And I don't know why. We had like last year, we had issues. I think it would have been done last year fairly easy if things were right for us. We had a few problems with the bike, which was only after TT we found out as well, but obviously myself as well, I wasn't right. But we still pulled out a top 10. But I would like to just get to 130, just not before I retire. I don't plan on retiring from here anytime soon, but just get that this year, just get that out of the way. I'd love to continue with top 10s and maybe push on. I think we can push on a bit more this year. We have a brand new bike built, similar to last year's bike, so there's no big changes, but I think a fresher bike and stuff will help as well. A little bit more knowledge about my body, and we've changed a few things in the bike as well as my gear and stuff that I've now with MASS letters, mass letters, and they've kind of made them the way I want them, so I can maybe fold my shoulders in a bit and get things in out of the way a bit and make myself a little bit more aerodynamic. Yeah, there's a few little things that we've changed, but I would like to get to 130. I'm not going to override it out of my abilities and chance anything, but I think that could come, and then continue on to top 10s, hopefully.
And do you know whereabouts on the course then that you're really going to be able to make that time? Is that something you sort of mentally think about? Or
yeah, I do laps in my head every night, and watch onboards, and yeah, I'm sick to death of watching onboards, because you watch Hickeys or Davy Todd's or Mickey D's, any of their onboards, and you feel like you're doing the same thing, but obviously there's subtle differences. The corner speed they hold in certain places and how early they get on the throttle in certain places. I'm probably holding on to the brake too much in certain places, not letting the bike flow through. I remember John McGuinness said that to me last year. He says he was behind me in practice. It's just let it go, like just let everything go a little bit. And it's just maybe last couple of years I hadn't had enough riding coming into it. Like last year I had no racing at all coming into TT, so only a few just to get signatures, like, and I only wobbled around. So this year with a bit more confidence on the bike and a bit more aggression in me because I've been racing a good bit, it will help. But yeah, I do. There are certain parts of the track that I know I'm a little bit weak and I could maybe force it a bit more. Nowhere dangerous or anything, but it's yeah, I could sharpen up a few places. Like I know straight away, yeah.
And before qualifying even gets underway, are you trying to get out there and do some laps on open roads just to refamiliarise yourself? Because I guess there's changes, aren't there, if they've had roadworks in certain areas
and
whatever.
That's all really, is to go and see where the changes are in the track and where the new bits of tarmac and patches and stuff are, because I know every bump of the place at this stage and everything that sticks out with you. So I don't really need to learn anything more that way. But yeah, obviously go and see where the new patches are and bits and pieces, and where hopefully there's no water coming up through the road this year in places. And if they cut down a few trees, I think, in a few places. So I just want to go out and see that, really do a few laps and get that into me. But the enjoyment of just driving around here as well, you know, just that buzz that you get. It's starting to get busy already. Yesterday, the traffic trying to get around yesterday was mad. But yeah, so yeah, I will get a few laps in just to see what changes have been made. But looking forward to it, yeah.
Now, your team is Roadhouse Macau. It's known as a Blues Bikes Rock and Sports Bar in,
yeah,
Macau. Are you a big music fan? Is music something that you play before you go out for a race?
I am a big music fan, but I've never really got into the... I think because when I'm running my own team, I'm kind of always watching what's going on and always talking to the boys. I don't get a chance to just sit there and put in headphones and get into my own zone, which, you know, might be a thing I should look at. I full trust in them. It's not that. It's just I'm kind of always thinking about things, and obviously when you're on it and I'm chatting to the lads, and I think I get more relaxed when I'm having fun with them on the grid and having a bit of crack. But yeah, music is big for me. I'm a big music fan and a very eclectic mix from, I could listen to anything really, you know. Yeah, so when I'm out in Macau, they have some really good bands playing out there when we're there racing, and Kieran, who owns it, is really big into his music as well, his rock music and stuff. So he has another bar in Manila as well, Roadhouse in Manila. So I might try and get a Roadhouse in Ireland at some stage and see if he's interested. But yeah, no, I sit in the van list singing to myself all the time driving around, because we do a lot of travelling. So
has anybody ever told you that you look like a member of an Irish boy band?
Oh,
I'm just asking, just so I put that out there.
Do I have the same name as him as well, do I?
you might do. I just didn't know if you noticed.
Yeah, it was funny, we were here years ago, there was a nightclub, I can't remember if it's still there now, and Gary Johnson told the bouncer that I was this member of a boy band. And it got us in the door.
So
that was 2010 or 12 or whatever it was back then. But yeah, no, I didn't have the big blonde. Well, I did at the time, the big blonde highlights. I don't anymore. I wish I had his money. That would help.
Well, if he's listening, if he could lend you a fiver, that'd be good,
wouldn't
it?
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it?
Obviously, start of TT, the newcomers are coming over. They've had all their practices, their newcomers weekends and whatever. If there was one piece of advice you could give to somebody who is just setting out, what would that be?
There's so many pieces of advice I try and give newcomers, but it's relax and not try too hard. You know, it's not that kind of place where you go out and push really hard. And because the mistakes I made at the start, I treated like a short circuit in some places, and that's why I crashed. You can't do that. You know, it's slow in, fast out everywhere. It's not. And I brought Kevin Keyes and brought Kevin around last year and was telling him a few little things. And every rider has a different thing that they notice or they can give to you and stuff. So a few things clicked with him that I said, and he got stuff from other riders, but it's just to treat it like that, not to be aggressive on the brakes, not to be too aggressive anywhere. So it's more like a chilled out ride than an aggressive ride, you know. Yeah, just relax and enjoy it and listen to the people who know and not listen to too many people who don't know. Some riders have this habit of going around and listening to everybody and asking people for this and this and what set up this and this. Just listen to a few people that are trusted and people who have been at the top, you know what I mean, been going well for years, because you can go down the wrong road fairly quick here. And I've done that myself, and I've learned all the bad habits, and I've learned all the bad lessons you need to learn around here, and listen to the wrong people and doing the wrong things myself. Like, I've been to blame for a lot. So yeah, it's just enjoy it though. It's just fun.
And have you got family who are coming over to watch you as well?
My fiancée, Carol, is coming over next week. She's kind of the only part of my family that are coming over. The rest of them will be all... My mum and dad are a bit too old to come to this stage. To be honest, they can't even watch me in a short circuit. They get too scared, you know.
Is Carla okay watching it? Does she mind?
She's okay. Yeah, she's... Yeah, yeah. We were only going out, I'd say, about 2 months and she rides a TT in 17. So it was obviously a big eye opener for her. She never, like, all she ever saw me was going around Tramore delivering bags of coal. You know what I mean? Next thing she sees me over here doing this. So it was a big eye opener then. And look, we've been through a lot of ups and downs. There's been a lot of bad stuff that went on in them early years as well, unfortunately, with crashes and stuff with lads. And she's been around for it all. So she's, I think she enjoys the buzz as much as me. And a lot of the people in the paddock are very close now. We're all very close friends. So when they all get together, it's a good social scene as well. You know, we all get on really well. So that's a big part of it. If we don't in that, there's no point in travelling around. But yeah, the rest of my family, they'll be watching and listening. A lot of friends. There's a lot of people from home coming. There's a lot of Irish lads and a lot of lads from my local town coming. Thank God most of them are coming in cars and vans and not bikes, because I'd hate to see any of them up around the mountain. But yeah, it's just great to have some support from home. And a lot of my local sponsors who are small lads, small businesses, they're coming as well. And we have hospitality this year, which is great. So we'll hopefully be able to put on a bit of a hospital for some of them and keep them happy.
Will you be in charge of the bacon baps?
I'm not in charge of anything. I've decided to hand off this to everybody. I have enough going on. So the hospitality will be run by someone else. And I have a beer. Actually, Snickers Workwear have brought their own beer now as well. So I've brought a few crates of that. Nice IPA if anybody wants a few cans.
Amazing. Nowhere to head.
Yeah.
And just... finally, obviously, the next couple of weeks are just going to be so, so busy. After that, it'd probably be quite nice to take some time off and just reflect. But I'm guessing that's not the reality.
No, not when this is your job. You can't really sit still. No, we're kind of looking to go. Hopefully, we're going to go back to a Matra in Finland and do a few road races in the IRC Championship. And yeah, no, we're always looking to the next race. But yeah, this is the big one for the year. So everything's built towards this, and then we'll see how the bank balance is and how the body is and how the bikes are after this, and then we'll make a plan from there. But no, it never sits still. We'll be racing flat out as far as November, I'd say.
I know you said you weren't brilliant on social media, but it is where everybody goes to now to sort of follow progress. Where is the best place to follow you?
Yeah, at Instagram. Instagram, and I've been told now I have a TikTok account. My nephew has started to take that over, so we'll see how that goes. Should be interesting. But BMAC Racing 111 on Instagram and on TikTok. My obviously Facebook and everything as well. But we're getting better. We're getting better with it. Carol hits me over the head every now and then saying, you haven't put up batting today or this, that and everything. I know it's hard because you're not in that. I haven't been growing up in that generation, you know what I mean? But and when you have so much else going on, it's hard to think of, oh yeah, I must put up this. And I'm not that kind of person anyway, but I know people do like to keep informed and see what's going on. So you kind of have to think about that as well. It's not just about me. So I'll get my young nephew. He's at the right age where he knows what to do. So we'll get all the social media sorted for this 2 weeks.
Perfect. Well, we wish you all the very best. Can't
very
wait
much.
To see how you do. And if you are around Douglas pretending to be someone from Westlife, we will see you.
Thanks very much. Yeah.
Brian McCormack. And have you ever seen him and Brian McFadgen from Westlife in the same room? No, I didn't think so. So great to talk to Brian, and everything crossed for that 1:30, and hope to see him on the podium as well. It's a team that really does deserve it. If you'd like to follow Brian's progress, the link is on the Journey to a Dream podcast page. And this podcast is brought to you by Kawasaki Insurance. Find out more about them by visiting their website. Again, the link's on the podcast page, but it's kawasaki-insurance.co.uk. And until next time, take care. Bye-bye.